and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today, I'm speaking with Fizza Pasha, makeup artist and founder of Brulee Beauty. After training at Delamar Academy in London and working as a makeup artist for over 15 years, Fizza saw a major gap in the industry, one that directly affected her work and the experiences of countless women, particularly those with South Asian skin tones. Rather than settling for mixing multiple foundations and concealers to achieve the perfect match, she set out to create a brand that caters specifically to these underserved shades. In this episode, Fizza shares the story behind Brulee Beauty, the challenges of representation in the beauty industry, and the deeper cultural issues surrounding colorism that still persist today. We explore why mainstream brands continue to miss the mark on inclusive shade ranges, how social media has given a stronger voice to underrepresented communities, and why true inclusivity in beauty needs to be more than just a trend. I hope you enjoy our discussion. Fizza, thank you so much for being on the podcast. So firstly, what inspired you to create Brulee Beauty, and how did your own journey shape the vision of the brand?
So I am a makeup artist. I've been trained with Delamar in London, and I've been practicing for about now 15 years. And what I noticed in the industry was, because I trained in London and I moved back to the Middle East, I live in Dubai. I noticed that when I was, doing makeup on my brides or like myself, even like people of golden skin tones, like those in-between shades, I was having to mix colors a lot. And even when I would mix like, two, three, let's say concealers or foundations, I still wouldn't get the right exact shade. Which kind of then I was like, okay, well, people of color, golden color, it's a bit more difficult and our makeup kits are a little bit more expensive. So I was like, Okay, I actually want to tackle this issue. And that's kind of where Brulee Beauty was sort of the brainchild of that was sort of, yeah.
That's great. It's so frustrating in this day and age that issue is still prevalent within our industry, because you think that given the conversations that are happening around sort of inclusivity and diversity, that there would be, makeup shades accommodate like the wide range of skin tones that we have, but there still aren't. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, the thing is that, you have brands that are like, launching 50 shades of foundation or concealer and things like that. But what ends up happening is that those in-between shades are often overlooked. So even if you go to that sort of a brand that has those 50 shades, when you look at those in-between shades, either they're too orange or they're too beige. And so like, I'll go pick up, like, let's say, for instance, a shade and it'll be too beige for me. And then I'll pick the next shade up and that'll be too orange for me. So those shades still look overlooked, even though the industry is championing diversity. They are championing like a lot of shades, but those in between shades are still like, they're still missed.
Because when you say golden skin tones, would you say that is characteristic of predominantly Middle Eastern people and South Asian skin tones?
Yes. So we kind of, our target market, the way we look at it, is Arabs, South Asians, Latinas, and then people that are of mixed race. Because, people that have like mixed race, they kind of have like a shade that's that in between shade. So they don't really fit in to either of the categories. So that's kind of what we classify, which if you look at it, is a very big market. So I'm shocked that, we're pretty much one of like the few that are catering to just those skin tones.
Well, I was going to say, like, when you think of the percentage of the global population that Middle Eastern people, South Asian people, Hispanic, Latino people make up, it's just crazy. I mean, why do you think that the industry is still failing to cater for those people, given that the size of the market?
I think because there's less awareness. And I think it's a cultural problem. I mean, I see it, and I'm going to go deep because I'm just, that's how I work. But like, for me, I think as a South Asian person, we're kind of taught to suppress our voice. We're taught to suppress our needs. So when we go out and we're, and this is across the board, like I've spoken to many friends, family, whatever, they're like, yeah, I've struggled to find the right shade of concealer or foundation or whatever. And yeah, I just mix these two and, oh my God, like if I mix this color with this color and this brand and that brand, and I'm just like, do you realize that that's not normal? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But because we're so conditioned to adapting to situations that it's ingrained in us, that we're like, okay, well, this is just normal for us. And I think that there's not enough awareness. So even with our brand, we spend a lot of money on just building that awareness and giving people that voice to be like, actually, that's not okay, and we still, we're still a relatively small brand. We still struggle, to get that message across to people and for people to actually understand that, hey, mixing colors or buying like three shades is not okay.
No, definitely. And it's that normalization that people are expected to just make do, mix a few shades together and just be, be content with that. Do you think that the sort of rise of sort of social media and people being more outspoken has contributed to the beauty industry kind of getting its act together a bit more, quite frankly, where?
Yes, I definitely think so. I definitely think that the underrepresented people are getting more of a voice, and I think that we are championing different cultures a lot more. But I think we still have a long way to go, and I really hope that as a South Asian founder, I really hope that this isn't like a fad where it's like, oh yeah, let's talk a lot about South Asians, or let's put them in TV shows and let's whatever, because that would just be sad. You know what I
It's not a
mean? Like, well,
trend.
yeah,
It's, you know.
exactly. Let's just hope it's not a fad. It's not a trend. It's here to stay, because I think that we still have to do a lot more to get the sort of representation that we deserve.
Definitely. And I think when brands see that their sales fly through the roof, they'll realize that it makes good business sense rather than just virtue signaling. I wanted to
Absolutely.
chat to you about colorism and sort of how your brand kind of engages in conversations around that topic and what impact do you want to make in that space?
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up, I'm Pakistani. So, I grew up in a household where, Pakistanis, the culture is that the fairer you are, the prettier you are, right? Creams like Fair and Lovely were sold, and things like that. So I was not super dark skinned, but I was browner than, let's say, the girl next door, for example. And so, my mom was pushed, like, by relatives and stuff, like, oh yeah, maybe use Fair and Lovely on Fizzah, blah blah blah, all this stuff. And hearing that, like, you feel like, hey, am I not good looking? You know what I mean? And so, there were a few incidents where I remember hearing stuff, conversations about me and my color. And again, it was very subtle. It was never said in front of me, but I always overheard it. And that kind of contributed to my lack of confidence growing up. And I think that I still have some self-worth issues. I think I think that I do, when I look in the mirror, I love the way I look and all of that. But you still have that little seed of doubt that's been planted at a very young age, which you kind of, I've grown out of it, but it's still there. Now, because I grew up with it, and again, I'm not saying that I was a victim or I was bullied or any of that. It was very subtle. And so that's why, like, I don't want to act as if it was like a traumatic childhood or anything like that. But because of that, I'm very passionate about that subject, where, people in our culture still talk about, like, oh yeah, that baby's so cute, he's so fair, he's so this. And I'm just like, dude, why does that even, or I'm looking for a daughter-in-law, but she has to be fair. People still say these things, and this is in a very educated society as well, right? So it's really weird to hear that. So I basically thought to myself that I don't want to be a part of a society that's that toxic. But that is the part, that is the society that I belong to. So how can I make a change in that society? But that's also not just in Pakistanis, but that's South Asians in general. And then that kind of goes on to Arabs as well, so I was like, okay, how do we do this? So I started, speaking up a lot about colorism, about my own experience. And Yeah, so that's kind of what that was my personal sort of journey that sparked this conversation and the speaking up about colorism.
And how is your brand moving away from those ideas that you were brought up with? Because I imagine as well, when you first started engaging with the beauty industry, the messages that you were receiving kind of reinforced those ideas that those about being the fairer you are, the better, really.
Yeah, so I think we focus a lot on education. So for example, we will tell people that use a shade of foundation that is true to your skin color. Don't go lighter. Don't if you have really bad dark circles, don't go lighter because that's just going to gray you out, you know? So we actually spend a lot on just educating people about their skin tones. And you know, we bring in models that are, you know, darker colored and stuff, and you know, they're so beautiful that, you know, like when people see other people that are like them, they're more likely to think that's the norm than, you know, than standing out. So I think that when people see more of themselves in models and in everyday life, I think that that kind of sparks a change in people's mind.
Definitely. And having said that, I feel like conversations around colorism, there's still a lot to be done. It's not really a subject that I feel is talked about enough, as opposed to sort of general representation and inclusivity. Brands tend to shy away from issues surrounding colorism. I mean, why do you think that is?
I think it's not an easy topic to talk about, right? And a lot of these brands haven't been founded by people that have gone through it. So if you go through a personal experience and you want to champion that subject, and you know, like make sure that other people don't go through it, I think it's easier when you have personal experience through it, right? Whereas I don't know how many founders have gone through that, right? And especially with the bigger corporate makeup brands, they I wouldn't think they're being run by predominantly like older either white males or females, right? So that's not a topic that they would even know about, to be honest.
Definitely. And I think that when brands sort of do try and cater for darker skin tones, they kind of lump everyone in together. So there'll be one kind of cappuccino shade, and then everything else will be Caucasian shades.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, with different skin tones, right? There's different
Yes.
issues that come with its skin concerns, right? So for us, for example, Brulé Beauty really talks about how we're very proud of the fact that we have skincare ingredients in our shades, right? In our makeup, because makeup is typically worn pretty much every day, right? And so if you're putting something on your skin every single day, it should be good for you. So, you know, Caucasian skin has different kind of skin concerns than, let's say, golden skin tones and black skin tones, right? So you cannot possibly have skincare that caters to each skin tone in those shades. You know what I mean? So like we target a lot of hyperpigmentation, which golden skin tones predominantly have. Dehydration and hyperpigmentation. So we have products that really hydrate your skin from within, and also they deal with pigmentation. Now, someone that has Caucasian skin doesn't really deal with pigmentation. So the ingredients that they're using in their, you know, skincare or makeup products, they might be different, you know, for concerns that they have.
And is that the main reason why you decided to focus on color correcting in particular, because of the hyperpigmentation being such an issue?
Yes, absolutely.
And what is your approach when people say, well, you should embrace your hyperpigmentation, it shouldn't be seen as something to hide or cover up? Because I think there's kind of quite an interesting conversation to be had around that. I mean, what is your take on it?
So I think, look, I think you need to embrace anything that you want to embrace. And like, I think that choice is very important, right? So, like for example, if you have hair on your body and you want to embrace it, go ahead. That's beautiful, right? Like, but if you want to go out and wax it off or laser it off, then that should be fine too, right? I just feel like we like hyperpigmentation is something that, you know, people struggle with in you know, South Asian and Arab skin tones. And people usually don't really like it. It's not like looked upon as, oh, yeah, go ahead and, you know, like flaunt it. Again, but if you want to, I feel like if you're okay with it, then that's totally fine. You know, but if you're not, then we have products that can help with it, you know. I just feel like with all these conversations about embracing yourself, I truly believe that you should embrace what you want to embrace. And it shouldn't be
Definitely.
because of what society is telling you or what your parents are telling you, what your friends are telling you. If you're comfortable with it, then by all means, like, embrace it. But if you're not, then we can help you on your journey, but we're not going to shame you for having it. Do you know what I mean?
Completely. Yeah, it can. I feel like makeup can be a bit like an armor. Like, if it makes you feel a bit more confident and it just gives you that edge that you need to get through the day, then I think there's nothing wrong. There's nothing
Exactly.
wrong with it in that.
And our makeup isn't like full coverage, like change your face makeup. You know what I mean? It's like light to medium coverage. And you know, we and yeah, so like, so it doesn't, like when you wear any of our products, it's not like you're changing your face or you're like, you know, layered up or it's cakey. We don't believe in that at all. Like, even as a makeup artist, my ethos was always my brides need to look like themselves. Like, their husbands shouldn't be getting a shock when that makeup comes on, like, who is that? You know what I mean? So for me, it's the same with my brand as well. Like, people have to look like themselves even though they're wearing makeup.
And I think that the whole Insta face phenomenon really contributed to that really heavy coverage, you know, the contouring, the what is it
Yeah.
called? Baking, where you sort of pack all this powder onto your face. Do you think we're finally coming out of that era?
I definitely think so. I think authenticity is being championed and celebrated. But there are still makeup brands that are making bank out of that. And I still see, especially maybe not so much in millennials, but in Gen Z, people wearing that kind of makeup, or you know, wearing concealer that's like three shades lighter than their skin color, and highlighting and then contouring with like 10 shades darker. And it surprises me that we're still doing that. I think it'll still take a few more years for us to get out of that trend.
Definitely. And also, I tend to think that when it comes to skin tone, I don't know if you agree with this, but our skin tone sort of changes depending on what area of the face it is. So it kind of the whole that, especially with darker skin tones, do you find that? And I find like that whole one size fits all doesn't always work, where it's just like wearing a single shade across your whole face. It can kind of make your face look flat.
Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And even as a makeup artist, like, we use different shades on different parts of the face, to give it dimension. Like you said, like, it the worst thing is like making your face look flat. But yeah, so you're absolutely right on that. But again, like, you know, makeup should enhance. It shouldn't completely change your face. So that's why
No.
we say, you know, if you have really bad circles, wear a concealer shade that is one shade darker than your cheek, because your cheek and your under eye area are two different shades. So if you wear a concealer that is the same shade as your cheek, what's going to end up happening is your under eye is going to start looking gray because that's too light for your under eye. So these types of things are very important to know when you're kind of wearing makeup.
And can we talk about you at when you actually built the brand? Because obviously it's no easy task to decide, right, I'm going to create a makeup brand. What were the main kind of challenges that you initially faced when you started Brulé Beauty, and how did you overcome them?
So I think the biggest challenge was finding the right factory to work with. I went to Cosmoprof, which is the biggest beauty trade show. It was in Bologna in Italy, and I remember I went with a friend of mine, and I walked in, and it was this huge, huge trade show, and I just walked in, and she saw my face, and she was like, "It's okay, just breathe, just walk in, and it'll be okay," you know. And finding the right factory to work with was really hard. And one of the biggest challenges was building a relationship with that factory. So the concealer that, you know, we have, it took me 2 years to build that formula. And I remember one of the owners of the factory, I think this was like maybe a year and a half in, we were sitting in, coincidentally, Cosmoprof, at another Cosmoprof. And I was sitting with him and his team, and he was like to me, "You know what? You're just taking the piss. Like, you've been working on this concealer for a year and a half, and we don't want to work with you. And I was like, no, like that's not possible, right? And I was all by myself, and that there's him with his team. Very intimidating. And I was
Also, would you
like,
speak to a man like that? That's the first thing that pops into my head. It's like if you were a guy running a business, would be that
I
kind of
know.
belittling and sort of,
I
well,
know, right?
mind
I
yourself,
know.
girl. Like that kind of attitude really bothers me.
It was really intimidating. And then I was like, well, he was like, you know, the perfect concealer doesn't exist. You're just way too picky. And I was like, well, the perfect concealer doesn't exist. This is why I'm sitting here in front of you, you know? So I held my own. And I said, I need another change because, you know, that's just what I want. And you know, whatever. And so one of his team members was like, okay, you know what? We'll give her two more changes, and then like, you know, and then that kind of just needs to happen. And funnily enough, when that concealer was launched, I got a message from the factory saying, good job, this is the best concealer that we've produced. And they work with some
Exactly.
of the biggest names in the industry. So that was a very happy moment for me because I was like, you know what? With me persevering and being like, nope, I'm still going to keep going and keep making the changes that I want to make, actually paid off. And then now that factory owner and I are actually good friends. So whenever we meet, he'll be like, oh, here we are again. You know, here's Fizza, our most difficult but like most loving client. And we laugh about it because I want my formulas to be clean. I want them to be vegan friendly. I want them to have the best performance. I want them to have like the best skincare ingredients. So getting all of that in one formula is quite tough. So I work them to the bone, but they are so grateful for me. So now we're actually friends. So that was difficult, but now we're
Yeah.
good.
But that just makes me laugh because when you think about how saturated the beauty market is, okay, and how much competition there is, it is such a huge risk to launch a new product range and, you know, get something that isn't like anything else on the market. Of course you're going to want to be exacting and you want it to perform in ways that are different to, you're not just churning out what everyone else is churning out. So
Exactly.
it
And these
just,
people have like crazy investment backing them. This
yeah.
is all done with my life savings. So if I'm gonna build a product, I understand that people say, you know, marketing, like people, you can sell people like a crap product with just really good marketing. I unfortunately don't have that liberty because I don't have the money backing me that these big corporations have.
No.
That if my product was bad and I got some bad press, I couldn't recover from that. You know what
No.
I mean? For me, like it's even more important.
And I know, like you said, you guys are friends, but just him calling you difficult really kind of irritates me because
Yeah.
not to get
Oh,
on my
but
feminist high horse, but.
I've been called difficult in so many instances, you know, like from my childhood to now, because I'm more feeling, I'm more sensitive. So in relationships, I've been called difficult, and you know, in family situations, I've been called difficult. So I'm used to it. I've grown a thick skin. Because of that, but difficult just means different, and different isn't understood by everyone. So I take that as a badge of honor now. I mean, after a lot of therapy.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
so that's why I think I'm very, very passionate about you know, just empowering people and empowering women. Because I've had to overcome that by myself with great therapists and healers and things like that.
Oh, that's really great to hear. And also, it's you're doing it for the women that, like you say, have been brought up not to be quote unquote difficult and to just accept that probably they'll have to just mix two shades together to get the one they want. Whereas you're
Absolutely.
doing this for them, you're saying, no, you deserve better than that. You deserve a product that actually is for you, that actually does suit your skin tone. So.
Well, exactly, right? But that's the thing. And I was on a panel recently, a few months ago, and Ruby Hammer was on this panel with me. And we were talking about like South Asian representation and stuff. And she's just a fantastic woman. She's built a
Ruby's
great brand.
incredible. I love Ruby. She's
Yeah,
so
she's built.
lovely.
Yeah, like she's built a great brand around herself and then, you know, now her products. And so she was just, you know, saying to the people like in the audience, she was like, you know, we're here and we're representing South Asians and, you know, we're building products for you guys, but how many of you are actually buying from us? You know what I mean? So how many of you are championing us? And that was a really great question because I'm like, yeah, we're spending all this money and we're spending all this time and blood, sweat, and tears, literally. Yeah, like I'm not
Yeah.
joking, all three things, into our brands. And we're building a product that's better than it can compete, not only compete, but beat. And I will get into what I mean by this. Any mainstream product that these women are buying, but how many of them are actually buying from us? Do they even want that representation? Do they even want us to speak up for themselves? Do you know what I mean? So a lot of our money goes into just that piece. So again, like I said, yes, these women don't have a voice and they want a voice, that we're giving them a voice. It's just about whether they're accepting of what we're giving them.
How do you think we can change that?
I think just more awareness and more conversations like this, every time anyone sits with me, and I'm like, my PR who introduced us, every time she sits with me, she's just like, oh my God, you have so much like wealth of knowledge to give to people. Like, I really want this, to get out. And I'm like, yeah, of course I do. But again, like, it's just one step at a time, I think, just with a lot more of these conversations.
Definitely. And obviously, you have your background as a makeup artist.
Yes.
I speak to a lot of my guests who are brand founders about this, like the female ones. I think as a female brand founder, there's that pressure to also be an influencer and the brand ambassador, which is a separate full-time job in itself. I mean, how do you navigate that?
So honestly, this was one thing that, a lot of people said to me, like, look at Huda Beauty, like she built a brand around herself. She had 1 million followers before she launched her lashes and all of that. And I was like, look, I can go down that route, which will take me a lot longer. And I'm not someone that's really into social media or all of that. Or I'll just build a brand and I'll let it speak for itself. So I think that I don't believe that you need to be like a social media influencer or be championing your own brand. I think that if you have a good product, people will naturally want to buy it. And I feel like my brand has superseded me currently. And I'm okay with that. I think that if you have a good brand and it stands for something, you don't really need to be an influencer yourself to champion it.
Definitely. I think it's important to have that disconnect of where you end and your brand begins, right?
Absolutely.
How important is brand story to you, and how did the story of your brand come together?
I think it's very important. I think that people want to see, that's the first point of contact, right? Is with your brand is your story, especially as an online brand. So I think that it's very important, and it was actually started through a personal experience. So for me, for that to come through and for me to help people through situations because of my own experiences in life, I think it's very important. So Brûlé Beauty, whilst yes, it is a beauty brand, and I'm gonna keep working on bringing out really, really cool products. I think one of the bigger purposes is to empower women, and really make them feel comfortable in themselves.
And I love the name Brûlé Beauty. Like, where did that come from?
So it was it's for brown people, right? Like brown, golden skin tone people. And I was just thinking about it. I was like, okay, well, brown in different languages, like how do I say it? I'm just brainstorming. My degree is in marketing, so I'm a bit of a creative in my head. And I was like, hey, like when you eat crème brûlée, which is one of my favorite desserts,
Same.
Yeah, I
That's
was
why I was
like,
drawn to it so much. I really love the name. I was like, oh, it's making me hungry.
yeah, I was like, oh my God, it's like caramelized sugar. So it's the same color that a woman that would be using my brand would be. So that's kind of where that like name came from. And it's funny because someone just you'll always have haters. And someone like messaged us on our Instagram, and they're like, "Oh my God, it's burnt sugar! How can you call your brand burnt sugar?" And I was like, "I don't know if it's burnt sugar." I was like, "We're not really having burnt sugar on creme brulee, are we? It's more like caramelized sugar." But you'll always have people saying things.
You always get your detractors, I
Yeah,
guess.
exactly.
I'm really interested in how brands sort of talk to their customers and the tone of voice that they decide to use. How much did you kind of focus on that when you were developing the brand? Like, how did you think about how you were going to talk to your customers in a certain way and perhaps differently to the way that you found you were being spoken to by brands?
Yeah, absolutely. So we always thought about we're not going to speak at the customer. We're going to speak to the customer, which is a big difference. And so I actually hired a copywriter. She's actually coincidentally one of my best friends from childhood, and she's, worked with really big brands, and she was at Harper's Bazaar and stuff. So she's very, very good
Those are
with
stuff.
language. Yeah, so she actually built a tone of voice for us, which we then refined over the years. So our tone of voice is basically it. We actually have a persona, and we call her Layla. She's the older sister, that's into like self-development. She's into healing, and she's into all of those things. And so when she talks to you, she talks with care and love, and that's kind of how we speak to our customers. That's our ethos.
I really love that, creating a character and kind
Yeah.
of sort of imbuing them with these attributes that you can then use to sort of guide your tone of voice. I think that's a brilliant idea. I
Yeah,
think one
exactly.
should follow suit.
Yeah, thank you.
What kind of moments when you were developing the brand made you think, right, this is gonna work? Or what have been kind of the main highlights for you, or your sort of biggest wins, as it were?
I think that just because I'm a makeup artist, I know product really well. So I know what works, what doesn't. So I think when getting the final, like, sort of formula and using it on myself and using it on people and seeing their reactions, I'm like, okay, we're on to something. And then, I would do crazy things like, put on like the Brulee concealer on one eye, and then, like, I would buy all like the biggest brands and put the concealer on their concealer on the other eye and notice and wear it for hours. And then I'd be like, yep, see this creased. Yep, see this faded. Really still there. So those sort of moments were really, really great for me. And then with our skin nectar, just there was this one ingredient that my factory was talking about. It's called sodium hyaluronate, which is a different kind of hyaluronic acid, which it deeply penetrates your skin and it also plumps up your skin. So, and it's in no other makeup product currently. And they were like, well, we can't put it in a makeup product. We've never done that before, because they're also a skincare factory. And they're like, we use it in skincare products. And I was like, nope, I want that in my skin nectar. And we went through a lot of back and forth, and they were finally able to put it in our formula, like, making some adjustments. And that to me was a big win, because I was like, yes, I have this product. And the third thing is we won two awards for the two products that we launched this year, or last year, sorry.
Congratulations. Brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you. And we won through, like, some really big names. Forget the gloss, we won for our Multi Mousse. Again, that texture does not exist in the market. So you will not see a mousse blush. Like, you'll see cream blushes, you'll see liquid blushes, you won't see a mousse blush. And the other thing, great thing about our blush is it actually lasts all day, which is weird because cream blushes don't really last, they fade off. I mean, it's a fantastic formula. And again, it works with, if you get pimples on your cheeks and they leave marks, it has a high dose of vitamin C, which helps with those marks. And we won over, like, it was Rare Beauty and Anastasia Beverly Hills. I'm like, that's a big thing.
That's
Like,
incredible.
yeah. So winning over them, I was like, that's, you're onto something good then.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, it's a huge win, huge
Yeah,
win, kind of.
exactly. And we're so small, we're babies compared to those brands.
But I think your products clearly sort of speak for themselves.
Yeah,
And
thank
it's so
God.
interesting that they pushed back about putting skincare in makeup, because no, that's skincare and this is makeup. I mean, do you think we're kind of now becoming more used to makeup being more skincare infused and not seeing the two as kind of separate entities and never the twain shall meet kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think all makeup does have a bit of skincare now, because I think people are becoming very conscious about it. But our makeup actually has an extra dose of skincare that you will not find in usual makeup, because And I pay a lot more for my formulas because of that reason. Because you'll have things, you'll have ingredients that people will put in their product in marketing dose or in functional dose. A marketing dose you can put in and you can claim that you have
Yeah.
that ingredient in your product. But in
Emotional ingredients, I've been told they're called, which is
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
I call them
So
dummy ingredients because I think it's just fraudulent, to be honest.
exactly. And but it's cheap, right? Because it's still there, but it's not to the degree that it'll affect your skin. But
No.
in functional dose, you have those ingredients and they'll actually make a difference to your skin. And some of, the skincare ingredients that we have, they're in functional dose. So I've paid quite a bit for those formulas. And making them available at the price that they are available through us, it's been tough. But
Yeah.
again, like I said, I started this brand to help people and to champion people and to give people a voice. So I'm thinking more long term in terms of I want these people, these products to reach the people that they're set out to be for. You know what I mean? So I don't want to make it inaccessible.
Completely. I think it's so tricky to find that right balance, especially when you're championing clean beauty and sustainability and all of that, because that comes with its extra cost as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And can we talk about your charity partner, the Citizens Foundation? Because you donate 5% of sales, is that right, to this charity?
Yes, we do.
So what drew you to them, and what kind of impact have you seen from the partnership since you've been working together?
So, what drew me to them was we actually know the founders that started this charity many, many years ago. So, our family has personally been involved with this charity since its inception. So, it's a credible charity and it's the biggest educational charity in Pakistan, which is why I was like, okay, I would rather donate to someone that I know my full money is going to the kids. And they're very transparent. They actually tell you down to what grade your money is going to. So I know exactly which kids I'm supporting through my donation from Brulé.
And can you explain their mission a little bit? Like, what exactly is it that they what
So
is that
they
that they
oh
do?
sorry, yeah, I should really tell you that. So they build schools in underprivileged parts of Pakistan. And they give education to people that whose parents cannot afford to even eat. They are providing education to kids like that. They give them uniforms, they give them food at school, and they go on to, and because this charity has been around for more than 20 years now, we've actually seen these kids go off to university, have jobs in banks and proper jobs like you and I would have, and they come from complete poverty where they didn't even have enough money to eat two meals. So for me, like seeing that type of impact is insane. And so I go and visit the charity whenever I can, whenever I'm in Pakistan. And I see the girls that that we've helped. And it was really funny because I'm because it's a charity run or school, and there's many, many schools around Pakistan. There's like hundreds of schools now. I went to one of them, the one that I actually donate to, and I was just speaking to the girls, and one of them said to me in Urdu, and I'll say it in Urdu and then I'll translate it. She said to me, "Aap hame dekhne aaye hain." And I was like, "Nay, main aapse milne aayi hoon." So basically what she said was, she was like, "Have you come to see us?" Like basically like as if they're on display. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, "No, I've come to meet you." And just that difference in me saying to her, "No, I've come to meet you," it just her face became really bright and she became really happy. And she gave me a hug. Because when you're doing charity and you're and these girls or these kids are coming from such underprivileged backgrounds, they think they're kind of on exhibition when you go to visit them, and it's so important for them to not feel like they're less than us. So I think that seeing that impact on these kids has been a big deal for me, and that's why I'm so passionate about it.
No, it sounds like a really fantastic initiative. So,
And
yeah.
And our mission also ties in with colorism because, unfortunately, in these societies in India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, because colorism is still quite prevalent, and it is more so with, the poorer parts of society. Girls are married off if they, let's say, they're not good looking, and they are, darker or whatever. They're married off to suitors that are actually quite old, abusive, and, they're kind of looked down upon. And they're in these unhappy marriages and they can't walk out because they're not educated. And they, what are they going to do? How are they going to earn money, right? So for me, my mission is to provide education to girls to be able to stand on their own 2 feet. And in the West, it must like sound like such a bizarre idea because education's so important and everyone has access to education, right? But in these parts of the world, it's not actually that common. So when a girl is educated, she can refuse the right to marry someone that she doesn't want to marry. She can walk out of an abusive marriage because she has the means to go and earn money herself. You know what I mean? Because it's financial abuse, in my opinion.
Definitely. And I imagine they're married at a very young age as well.
Yes, they are. They are. Because, if you're dark, you're a burden to your family, you're not going to get good suitors. So the first person that comes along, just marry her off.
My gosh.
Yeah, it's really sad, but people actually go through that in these parts of the world.
Your skin tone kind of dictates the course of your life, basically.
Yep, it does. It really does.
Well, it sounds like it's, fantastic work that your brand is doing in, with that charity. So
Thank
it's
you.
really it's really great that you've partnered with them, and as well as sort of supporting South Asian charities and talking about colorism, like how else does your heritage influence the brand's mission, would you say?
I think it's just about conversations, and I think it's about because I grew up in a society where women were told to compromise and not really speak up and stuff. I think I really champion people speaking up and speaking their mind in a productive way. So I think that part of culture has really influenced me, but also celebrating my culture. I think there's so many good things about it, like the warmness that we have and the I don't know, the religious holidays, the cultural holidays and things like that, and I don't know, the colorfulness of our culture that we have. I love celebrating all of that too. So I think that all of that plays a big part in how Brulé comes across to people. I want it to be like a fun, colorful brand as well, because our cultures are quite fun and they're quite vibrant. So that definitely influences the brand.
For sure, and it's lovely that you're celebrating that. What plans do you have for expanding your product range with that in mind?
So we have actually 3 new products that we're working on. Hopefully, we're able to launch 2 of them this year. Launching a product is just it's crazy. So it's some of my busiest times are coming ahead right now. And yeah, they're going to be great. They're again going to be multi-purpose where, they're skincare with makeup. And yeah, I'm really excited about them, and I'm hoping that they're award worthy again, because again, I'm letting my ego speak, but winning an award over bigger brands is always something that I'm going to be proud of.
As you should. And yeah, don't apologize for letting your ego speak, because I think it serves a purpose. I think it has a function. And you should definitely be proud of everything that your brand has achieved. And
Thank
I'm
you.
very excited to hear about the new launches when you're able to tell us a bit more about them. And finally, because we're almost at the end of our time together, what advice would you give to other aspiring beauty entrepreneurs, especially those who are focusing on communities that have perhaps been underrepresented in the past?
I think if you really truly believe in something, you need to put your blinders on and you need to keep going. There's going to be a lot of people that will come in and say, no, you can't do this, or you can't do that, or are you crazy? You're putting all your life savings into this, or are you crazy? You're raising funds for a project that's, seems like a passion project. Do not listen. And no one has it all figured out. I think you learn along the way. So don't be scared of failing and learning, because that's just a natural part of life. But yeah, I think keep your blinders on and keep focused on your goal. And always build something that helps people. I think when you come at building something with the idea of helping people, you'll always succeed.
Definitely. And then it also, if you do happen to have an ego, it makes it more acceptable because it's not just about you, it's about the people that you're helping as well. So I
Exactly.
think that there's nothing wrong with championing yourself and celebrating everything that you've done and are doing. So
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
with
Thank you
that in
so much.
mind, thank you so much, Visa, for being on the podcast.
So much. Thank you so
Yeah.
much for having me, and thank you so much for giving me a safe space to talk very openly.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.